Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to August. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to each and every one of you to another episode of Hand and Footprint, What is Your Legacy? Of course, I am your host, Ms. Ricky R. Jones, and I'm so glad that you guys chose to be here. You could have been anywhere, like I always say, on a Saturday morning, but you really chose to be with me for the next hour, and I truly appreciate it. I don't discount that at all. For those of you, for this is your first time being on Hand and Footprint, welcome, welcome, welcome. We're so glad that you decided to join us this morning. And for those of you who are constant supporters, I truly appreciate that you guys are on with me and you're always being supportive. So welcome to you. The phone number to call in is 347-826-9723, 347-826-9723. Press the number 1. If you guys are listening online, and shout out to my folks who are always listening online, especially in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. I see you guys already popping online. I appreciate it always for the support. For the rest of you who are out and listening online, you can inbox me on the Hand and Footprints page on Facebook. Those of you who also follow Ricky Jones, you can shoot me an instant message if you have a question or a comment for our guest today. So it is August, and I absolutely love all the months. Every day that you get up, you know, you should just absolutely love it regardless. But there's just certain times of the year that I really enjoy, and August is one of them because it's so crazy how you can, when you look at August, it really isn't too much. Like every month has something going on. It's dedicated to something or there's some type of a holiday. August doesn't have that. So when you look at it, it's like, oh, well, it's a boring month. But it really is that month of transition. It's towards the end of the summer. For some people, you know, they're getting their kids and probably very, very happily getting their kids ready for back to school. I can't say that on behalf of the teachers because they're probably not ready yet. And it's just this whole transition. You know, you're looking in the stores and all the summer gear is going on sale. I know I have gotten at least 6 text messages already about, you know, certain sales at certain stores that will be nameless. And so August is just this crazy month of transition, and transition can be a great thing. One of the other things that I like to do here on Hand and Footprints about August is this the whole thing of we start talking about our money and our finances. Like I said, a lot of the sales are popping up for our parents who are getting ready to get their kids back to school, myself included. I know a lot of times on some of our jobs, a lot of our people are preparing for retirement. You know, they're already some people who work all year round. This is the time that they start gearing up for, all right, I'm getting ready to retire before the cool air kicks in and that kind of thing. So August is really, really awesome. And I want to be able to tell you guys about our guest who's going on because he is going to talk money. And there's nothing. And I know we get freaked out about talking about our money, but I tell you, once you guys get off the air today, you're really going to feel so much better about being financially healthy. So I'm going to stop with the whole running my mouth, and I'm just going to tell you about this gentleman. I'm going to remind you guys, 347-869-723, press the number 1. So H. Cortez Thornton is an author, a speaker, a home business consultant, entrepreneur, and what he likes to call himself is a financial health mentor who is the mentor for the working class, and he likes to teach unique ways about financial literacy, and he considers himself, the way he teaches you, his approach, it is definitely different from what you get out here. I mean, you have your financial advisors and your planners, and they help you kind of properly invest your money, and let's be honest, a lot of us don't know the thing about investing our money because we're so busy going to work and we're so busy trying to, you know, we may live from paycheck to paycheck, but that's not what he's about. Being a financial health mentor is about teaching how to free up your cash flow, how to build, you know, the emergency funds when things, you know, happen, how to get out of debt, how to teach your young about investments and even teach yourself, and how you feel comfortable and be informed about your money and about your long-term future. Because, I mean, hey, without money a lot of things can go wrong with money. Things can go right. It's all about learning what to do with it and be comfortable with it and be healthy. So, and we're also going to talk about his new books, and we'll get into that a little bit later on as well. But I want you guys to get yourselves ready. Get your pens and your papers out. Grab your wallet, even if it's empty. Blow the dust out of it, whatever. I want you guys to get yourselves ready. Good morning, Cortez. How are you?
I am wonderful, Ricky, and thanks for having me and introducing me to your Hand and Footprint tribe. Glad to have an opportunity to speak to them this morning.
I'm glad you're here because, like I said, it's and what I like about you being, you know, this whole financial mentor, like you said in your write-up, you know, advisors, that's exactly what they do. They advise you what to do. But let's be honest, a lot of us have no clue. That's when we say advisor or financial advisor, we're thinking, oh, that's somebody who's rich, somebody who had money. I don't have time for that. I'm trying to make sure I get all this sale that I can get at Target and Walmart so I can get these kids back to school. So I'm not thinking about the healthiness of my money. And, you know, I think about healthiness of my body, my mind, my spirit, but not of my money. So how, well, let's go back before we get into how we become healthy. Let's go back and just talk about who H. Cortez Thornton is and how he became this financial health mentor.
Sure. Well, excuse me. Basically, I am fourth born of six children, raised by a single mom here in the St. Louis metropolitan area, although I was born in Mississippi, Tupelo to be exact. And if anybody knows anything about Tupelo, it's probably famous for Richard Pryor talking about it and famous for the same place Elvis is being born, was born as well. But raised in St. Louis since the age of nine and literally by a single mom on welfare and know all too well what it's like to struggle financially. And even though we were broke coming up, I don't consider myself poor because I saw a lot of poor people in poverty. And when I think about poor, I think about the permanent mindset, the hopelessness of a people who don't believe that there is a way out. And for me and even my mom, we consider ourselves broke because that's a temporary situation that you find yourself in until you find the solutions to get yourself out of it. And we've always been looking for those solutions. So even though poverty and lack was the expectation in the small community of Wilson where I grew up, I think we always knew that there was light at the end of the tunnel and that we'd find a way out. And for myself, basically, I'm what's called a serial entrepreneur. Since I was old enough to wield a rake and push a lawnmower, I've been out here chasing this thing called money and trying to hustle and on my own. And as kids, we would rake leaves and cut grass and shovel snow and even pump gas for quarters. And but being raised by a single mom, I went through the phase where not having proper mentorship in my life, well, that entrepreneurial spirit in me ultimately got perverted. A lot of the older guys saw the hustle in me and my crew and ultimately lured us into the street life, and we found ourselves on the corners and doing things that we shouldn't have been doing. But had we had mentors in our lives to help keep us on the path to say, hey, your entrepreneurial spirit is right, but let's show you how to continue to nurture that and grow that in a positive way instead of being subjected to the negative influences of our community. It would have served me right, even though I don't regret much because I know everything that you go through prepares you for where you are. So after years of failing in different businesses, real estate and all kinds of things, a couple years ago I realized the one thing that I was missing was the financial literacy piece, not always knowing how to make money but not quite knowing how to manage it and get that money working for me was the issue that I had. And so I started to study financial literacy. I started to, you know, guys like Kiyosaki and, you know, Dr. Kimbrough talk about and interview, you know, thousands of millionaires and understand their mindset and their success and other financial literature on how to get money working for you. And then I ran into a group that's called the Extra Digit Movement, where they actually put it all together for me and helped me see that how all of these things work hand in hand, the ability to make money, but also the ability to manage money and keep money, and then the ability to properly invest that money and get that money working for you. And that's how I fell in love with those concepts and precepts and understood them so well, and ultimately began teaching them. And everyone that I've taught so far have had so much success that it led to me writing the book and basically building my company on these financial principles, and really wanting, having the desire to get this information out to the masses.
And I'm glad you did. And I have been enjoying learning some tips and tricks with your new book. But let's talk about you getting into the business, because, I mean, you know, you started and you always knew the hustle. You knew that there had to be a hustle. And I think for a lot of us, we understand that the struggle and the hustle is really real, and you do have to get out here. And, you know, society kind of dictates to you that you do have to chase the paper. But at some point in time, and it's one of the things that you talk about in the book, at some point in time, you had, you know, you get to the point where you stop chasing the paper and you let the paper chase you. And I think that's where a lot of us get stuck. We get stuck and we still always have to chase the paper, the bill to do, the car note, the this, the that, the that, the that. And we're still chasing and chasing and chasing. And we're never, it's just like, it's just like a dog chasing its tail. You never seem to catch up to it. But now you started your own business. How did that, you know, how did that start off with you getting into your own business, and how did that work for you?
Well, basically, I've always had some sort of business, even though I work a full-time job. I've always known that everyone who has ever built any sort of wealth, especially generational wealth that passes down to their children, have always done that through a business. So I've understood that very clearly. So I've always had a business of some sort, but my businesses in the past have always been sales-driven, and that's similar to the 9-to-5. It's okay, if your business is sales-driven, then you're pretty much always chasing the next sale. And when I hooked up with my mentors and started learning the principles of applying money strategies, they not only took my existing businesses to another level, but I also saw an opportunity to create a business around these strategies as well, because I'm by nature a mentor. I'm a youth basketball coach. I love helping people. I love educating people. I love sharing knowledge. Anything that I learn, I can't wait to teach it to someone else. So that's in my nature. And then when I started understanding the financial strategies and concepts that I now teach, it was just a no-brainer that, hey, I even put some of the other things that I was doing to the back burner, because if there's one thing that we need more than anything, especially here in America, that is the right financial education. And the reason I say I'm the financial health mentor to the working class is because the working class are the people who tend to get the short end of the stick. They're working the most hours, 70, 80 hours a week sometimes, 5, 6, 7 days a week sometimes, and they still struggle. And I know all too well what it's like to, you know, be behind on your mortgage and your car notes, have cars repossessed and all of that sort of thing. You know, how about not being able to get your kids what they want, and not because they don't deserve it because they're clowning in school or something, but because you can't afford it. And working class people deal with that on a day in, day out basis. And we talk about physical health along with financial health. We know that a lot of physical health starts with stress that comes from poor financial health. So when I started looking at all of these things, I said to myself, I said, here is an opportunity for me to stick with what I love to do, which is to coach, mentor, and teach, but also bring a certain level of value to the lives of everyday hardworking people that really, truly need this information and can do a lot with it. Because one thing about the financial planners and a financial advisor, they are great if you come to them with money already. Where they are not so good, and this is not to bash them because it's kind of not what they're set up to do, they're not so good in helping those who don't have the money. So if you have the money already and I have an extra $1,500 every month that I can invest, a financial planner or a financial advisor will help me grow that $1,500 every month with no problem. But when I come to them as a person living paycheck to paycheck and say, hey, I know I need to start investing for my future, what they can't do in most cases is say, okay, here's how you can free up the cash that you need to start investing long term. And that's why I think my company is positioned in such a unique place in the marketplace, because most of us are at some point living paycheck to paycheck, and we don't have the discretionary income that we need to start putting to the side to start investing in our long-term future. So that's how the company kind of came to be, and now I'm just spreading this information through radio shows like yours and really just trying to get the message out. And what I like more than anything is I can bring this sort of value to someone's life without having to sell them anything, and that was great for me to be able to bless someone. Whether they want to partner with me or not, I can still help educate you and put you on a path to getting your financial health in order, irregardless to whether or not we form a partnership or you get into a relationship or purchase the book or anything like that.
All right. So now you guys heard that. For those of you who are just tuning in, welcome. This is Hannah Footprint. I'm your host, Ms. Ricky R. Jones. We are on the line with Mr. H. Cortez Thornton, financial health mentor for the working class. He is getting ready to tell you guys, so make sure that you get your pen and your paper, your wallet, everything else is working for you. Make sure that you get yourself together and you're sitting and you're listening how to get your money right, because I'm getting ready to hit him with some questions, some of them from me and some of them I'm getting from folks who are chatting in the chat room with us, Cortez. So get ready, folks. If you have a question, you can either do it online, you can send me a message, or if you're calling in, you can press the number one, and you can definitely do it from there. All right, so here it is. I'm the person living paycheck to paycheck, Cortez. I'm bringing home maybe in one check, I'm bringing home a total of, you know, maybe $900. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have rent. I make sure the kids eat. I have four kids. I have a piece of a car and car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing you talking, save some money. What's the word called? Like, so I'm coming to you and like, yo, I need help. This is what I'm making. How you going to tell me? Because that just doesn't seem real to me. You know, because I'm pretty sure you've heard this. Like, so it doesn't seem real to me. How you going to tell me to save my money? Because listen, I got to keep the lights on. I got to keep the big cable on. Two of my four kids have phones. I have a phone. So what's going on?
Right.
Like, listen, help me out.
Yeah. No, I get it all the time. It's like, okay, where do I find the money? You say the financial advisors can't help me find it. How are you going to help me find it when every dime I get is going to these bills? And you're exactly right. What we find is that, for the most part, we have two main objectives that we're trying to take care of. We're trying to eat today, and then we know that we're going to need to eat tomorrow, meaning today we want to pay for our lifestyle with our labor. But eventually there's going to come a time where we either can't work, we don't want to work, or the employers don't need us to work, but we're still going to have a lifestyle that we're going to have to pay for. So that is typically paid for with your investments. But what you're asking is, if I'm living paycheck to paycheck, where does the money come in to start building up those investments? And the answer is relatively simple when you understand the society that we live in. And unfortunately, this information isn't taught in schools, but I'll give it to you here. Our number one biggest expense is taxes. And most people don't realize that. They will say, well, my biggest expense is my mortgage, my rent, or my car note.
That's
where most of my money is going. Well, for most of us, if you look at the total amount of income that you make, versus the amount of mortgage or rent that you pay, it don't equal about 30 to 35% of your income. Taxes do, all right? Most people don't realize that. But in 2005, the IRS put out a memo that basically says that 8 out of 10 Americans are overpaying their taxes to the tune of $40 per week. So that's $160 per month that they're overpaying their taxes. So one of the things and one of the primary strategies that we use is we look at someone who's working at a traditional job and they're getting a paycheck. We look at whether or not they're overpaying their taxes. We know 8 out of 10 people are. So that could be you while you're bringing home $900 in a paycheck and all of that $900 goes to your bills. Well, a lot of it is also going to Uncle Sam. But what if you're overpaying Uncle Sam per pay period by $50 a pay period? Now, if that is the case and we can make the proper adjustments and a proper correction, now we bring back into your household anywhere from $160 to some people up to $500 per month just by making the adjustments to stop to Uncle Sam.
So now how do we make the adjustments? Because, you know, all of us who work, when we get on, first of all, mm-hmm. First time we get on a new job, we're so happy to be there, especially if we haven't been working for a while or if we've gotten into a better working situation than what we've had. When we get on there and they give us all the paperwork to fill out, you know, child, I'm just so happy to have a doggone job. Like, I don't even care. I'm just going, whatever. And, you know, we get these, you know, especially that form, the W-2 form, and we get it like, I don't know what my deduction is. I don't know. Like, what the hell is all this on here? I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to fill out one. I know I got four kids. That's a deduction. That's all I know. So here you're telling me I'm overpaying in my taxes. And you're saying, and I'm saying to you, really? So now we're here again. How do we fix that?
And you're exactly right. It is that form. It's called the W-4 Employer Allowance Withholding Certificate. So that form basically tells the government all about, well, your employer uses that to tell the government all about your financial situation so that they can properly assess how much money to withhold for your paycheck each pay period to cover your tax liability. Well, what most people don't do when they're completing that form is read it. They typically go in and sit down, and like you said, they're excited. They're either leaving one job to another better opportunity, or they're out of work for a while, so they're excited because they're back at work and finally can start getting themselves back on track. And they don't sit down and read the form. And in a lot of cases, they basically fill the form out according to the way they were taught to fill the form out when they got their first job. And usually you were taught by a parent or someone, and they said, just put one down for yourself and put zero and keep it moving. Which that might have made sense. That might have made sense if you were 17 years old because all you had was yourself as a dependent. But at 25, 35, 40 years old, there's a difference in your living situation. So if you read the form, it's quite clearly what it is that you're supposed to be doing and how to properly fill it out. So one of the things that we do when you partner with us, we help you review that form, ask you some questions about your living situation. Are you married? How many children do you have? Are they underage? 18, are they still living in the household with you? And then we go over that form line by line to help you fill it out. But really, it's self-explanatory if you take the time to read it. A lot of times people are, again, just going on assumptions because they're confused with the terminology. There's a difference between a dependent and an allowance. So they typically go on there and put their number of dependents. But there also are allowances that can be included on that form, whether if especially if you have a home-based business of some sort. There's other allowances that you could take advantage of. But on average, people, 8 out of 10 people fill that form out incorrectly, and it's costing them because what I like to teach people is that here's how we can set you up with a positive snowball effect. All right, we know what the negative snowball effect when we're talking about finances, right? You lose your job. So now one bill gets behind, and then the next bill gets behind, and then ultimately the Cardinal gets behind. So that's a negative snowball effect, because one small hookup, maybe you don't even lose your job. Maybe your car breaks down and you have to spend $1,000 on repairs, so you have to take money from the mortgage or other places to get the car fixed so you can continue to go to work. But negative snowball effect, now you're behind on your rent 1 month. Now you take money from the car note to help catch the rent up, so now you're behind on the car note. Now you're taking money from other places, so that just affects you negatively, and it continues to happen. And Lord forbid you have another catastrophe in the middle of all that. It really begins the snowball effect. Well, here's the positive snowball effect. We said 8 out of 10 people have that form filled out incorrectly, and on average, they're overpaying by $160 per month. Say, for instance, you are the person who is overpaying by $160 per month. We adjust your W-4 form, and we get you back on track where that money is now coming back into your household. Here's how the positive snowball effect begins. First of all, it's going to take some discipline. You're not going to take that newfound $160 a month and go blow it or go get into more debt. All right.
You must have known
that's what I was
thinking. Wait a minute. You said $160 extra. Can I tell you what I can do? How many more Starbucks coffee I can get with that $160 extra? So, you were talking to me.
Yeah. So we're not going to do that, because remember, this is money you did not have. So we're going to treat it as if it's money that doesn't belong to us. So what we're going to do with it, say, for instance, you have that $400 car note. Well, how fast can you make that car note disappear if you're throwing an extra $160 at it each month? So here's how the positive snowball effect works. So maybe you got a 36-month loan on that car, but you're throwing an extra $160 at it every month. That car note may disappear in 12 months. Now your cash flow is positive, not just the $160. It's positive $160 plus the $400 that was going to the car note. So now instead of $160 that you have each month, you have $560 each month. So maybe the next thing on your list is to get rid of that student loan. So how fast does the student loan disappear when you're paying the regular student loan payment, which is already in your budget, but you're adding an extra $560 to it each month? It disappears relatively quickly.
You know, I'm sitting, and you know that's a question, that, and I know you've heard it.
Yeah.
But what if, like, oh, my gosh, because, you know, love my mother to death, love her to death, rest in peace and all that goodness. But, you know, there's some folks, old folks, that tell you, listen, what you going to go to work, spend your whole life going to work, pay bills all the time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, got to be able to, you know, have something for yourself or spend a little bit on yourself. So now I have this extra hundred and something, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do with my bills. Why, you know, why can't I take, because, you know, a lot of times you'll hear financial advisors tell you, pay yourself first. Why can't I take that $160 or that $150 or that $200 extra and pay myself first and then go back to paying the extra on the bills? Like, why do I have to pay extra now that I have this extra?
Good question. That is definitely an option. But what we find is you can pay, when you say pay yourself first, it sounds like you mean go have a good time, pay yourself first, versus pay yourself first as putting that money in some sort of investment of some sort.
Oh, okay.
So when we say pay yourself first, usually financial people are not saying go turn up, pay yourself first. It means, you know, pay yourself first, put that money in some sort of investment that's going to bring your returns later. But, no, that's a good question. It's all about your preference, your option. You have to remember that we teach two primary things that you can do, three primary things that you can do with that money. Number one, if you are solid and don't have a whole bunch of debt, then we teach you to immediately take that $160 and start building an emergency fund. Because we know the emergency fund is what prevents the negative snowball effect from happening. Car breaks down, you don't have the $1,000, then you start robbing Peter to pay Paul. Get your emergency fund together. Second thing that we teach, if you don't have a lot of debt, or especially high interest revolving debt, then you can take that money and you start immediately putting it into some sort of investment if you already have your emergency fund built up. Because, again, we don't want to start investing money and then we have a catastrophe happen, then we typically have to go pull that money out of that investment to take care of the catastrophe. So if you already have your emergency fund built up, if you don't have a lot of high-interest revolving debt, then, yeah, that 160 will look good going into an investment portfolio. And if you did that at an 8% rate of return over 30 years, which is someone's working career, that goes to over $230,000. So that is definitely an option. And then the third option is if you do have a lot of high interest rate revolving debt, then you want to tackle that debt first. And the reason we focus on debt is because in a lot of cases, I can invest that money at an 8% rate of return, and that's pretty doable. But if you have credit card bills where your interest rate is 19-27%, those high interest rates, it would be more effective and beneficial for you to get rid of that than to invest that money at an 8% rate of return. Because actually when you pay off that credit card debt, it's almost like an investment where you're getting a 19% rate of return because you're getting rid of a debt that's charging you that much to manage and maintain. So that's right. Why we focus on getting rid of the debt, because most people are in what we call a negative cash flow cycle. That means your lack of money is costing you money, right? So, for instance, you know every month that your mortgage or your rent is due on the 5th, but your pay period falls on the 12th every month. So what typically happens? You're going to pay your rent on the 12th when you get paid, but since you're paying it late, what are they attached to it?
But now they put the financial charges to it. But now
they put the financial charges or a late fee.
Well, I mean, if it's due on the 12th, then that's not late.
No, I said it's due on the 5th, but you get paid on the 12th.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got you.
So you ended up, because you didn't have your money, right, your lack of money costs you more money. Same thing when you go into a car dealership, right? If you have the money cash, then 9 times out of 10, not only will you save the interest of having to finance the car, you can probably get the car for a cheaper price. They may be selling the car for $30,000, you go in with $24,000 cash, or you're going to walk away with that car. Most definitely. All right. But if you walk in needing finances, not only are you going to pay the sticker price of the $30,000, they're going to tack on another $15,000 in interest payments because they have to finance you. So your lack of money costs you money. So what we like to do is try to get people to free up their cash flow so that they do have discretionary income at the end of every month so you don't have more month than money. That relieves a lot of stress. That also puts you in a better position to make some better decisions. And, yes, if you use that 160 to pay off the car note, now you got an extra 560 at the end of every month, sure, you can take 200 and go buy you some shoes. But you still got 360 that you can be throwing at another bill, and you're not upside down on your lifestyle. You're not in a negative cash flow cycle. At the end of every month, you have positive cash flow. And if you want to go on vacation with that, that is something that you have now have the option to do. But think about living paycheck to paycheck, and you want to go on vacation. What do we typically do? Take bill money to go on vacation.
Right.
So that's a big difference.
Oh, my goodness. For those of you, I know it's scary, and I know you don't want to ask questions. We are getting some questions from our online listeners. Cortez, but listen, this is some good stuff. I'm sitting here and I'm listening. I'm taking my notes, and he's talking to me too. So don't feel bad, guys. Don't feel bad. Those of you who are just tuning in, welcome, welcome, welcome. We are talking about you getting financially healthy. Yes, you who are working at Target, you who are working at the bar, you who are working at the high level office job. Yes, all of us can get financially healthy. If you have a question for Cortez, you can dial in 347-826-9723. Those of you who are already online with us and listening, make sure you press the number 1. Those of you who are listening via the internet, we got a chat going on. I'm telling you, so many questions, Cortez. So many questions, because one of the things that people are saying is, I can't believe he's talking about me. Yeah, and listen, don't feel bad. He's talking about me too, because no. I have a whole. I'm okay, but listen, there's always some things that I need to learn too.
Let me say this, Ricky. Let me say this.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't talk about money, we assume that we're the only ones going through these situations.
Right.
Guys, everybody, the recent statistics that came out earlier this year that said 76% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So when you look around, that's 3 out of every 4 people. So I want you to, when you start looking at people, strip away the fancy car, strip away the fancy clothes, and just start counting people. Every 3 out of 4 people is living paycheck to paycheck. Now, they may be living paycheck to paycheck at a different level than you, because even executives may be getting a $10,000 a month paycheck, but they have $9,500 a month worth of bills. So they're still living paycheck to paycheck. They're just broke at a higher level. So I don't want anyone to feel bad that, you know, I may have mentioned some things that you're going through, because we're all going through it. That's why my target audience is the working class. If I had known this stuff 10 years ago, I'd be wealthy right now. So I'm trying to put it out there to people that, hey, if you get your taxes under control, that's money that you can take to start building for your future. And if you just think about it, when you talk about debt and you say paying yourself first, but think about if you had zero debt with the amount of money that you make right now, how much different would your life be? All right, think about it. You have the same car you have now. A lot of us have late model cars, but they got notes attached to them. So you got the same model car that you have right now, but you have no car note. You have the same house that you have right now, but you have no mortgage or rent. All right? You have, you've gone through school and got your education, but you have no student loan. So when you start getting the money, because that's the second thing that we teach. Number one, you get your money back from Uncle Sam. The second place you get your money back is from the banks. So now that you take your money back from the credit card companies, the student loan companies, the banks that hold your mortgages, and the credit unions that hold your car notes, just think about how much better your life would be if you had zero debt. And we can use this positive snowball effect to eliminate the debt.
I hear what you're saying. I do.
Yeah.
So now help me.
And that's why I said you have to be disciplined. It's not going to be easy, because we're conditioned to be consumers. So you have to start writing some things and the way you think about money to really accomplish this. But like I said, when you're freeing up $500, $600, $700 a month, then you can still use $500 for good and play with $200 and not feel guilty about that. The guilt comes in when I take my mortgage money and go on vacation, knowing when I get back, now I'm going to have to try to figure out how I'm going to catch up on my mortgage.
How to pay the mortgage, right?
Yeah.
And we do that.
Yeah.
We do that.
Yeah.
So now tell me, because what's going on in the chat room, people are saying, all right, they understand what you're saying. So then tell me how should I pay my bills? If I get paid, you know, because some of us get paid every 2 weeks, some of us get paid bi-monthly, some of us get paid monthly. So now I have my bills. Like my biggest bills, I'll use me for example, my biggest bills at one point in time are the mortgage and the phone and the stupid credit card.
Right.
You know, and all the little, you know, and the food shopping. So usually my one check is for the big, I usually do the big bills, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So folks are asking in the chat room, because, so how do I pay my bills? Should I, if I have a mortgage that, or if I have a rent that's $1,100 a month and I'm bringing home in one particular paycheck with this extra $100, $200 that we done found, that we done found with fixing our taxes up. So how should I pay? Should I pay? And it's not due until, wait a minute, let me see. Okay, so it's not, here's the whole scenario. My big bill, say, let's take rent, for example, rent and the utilities. All of them are not due until the end of the month. And it's the beginning of the month, I just got paid. How do I pay it? Because one of the questions is, do I pay all the $1,100 plus the utilities, or should I split it? So how do I pay my bills? That's the question in a nutshell. How do I pay my bills?
Okay. That, for that, that's personal preference. But what I will say is you want to get ahead of them. So we have a tendency to not want to pay our bills before they're due, but try to wait to the day that they're due or pay them within that grace period. So if you're the bulk of your money is coming to you in the beginning of the month, and you know your bills aren't due until the end of the month, especially if you only get one check or you pay monthly, go ahead and pay most of that or what you owe to those bills up front. Because I would tell you, you will sleep better. Now, here's another option that you could use when you're dealing with budget. All right? You can use, for instance, for those who get paid biweekly, and it seems that their pay periods never fall just right. Because I've experienced it. It's like, man, my pay periods fall right after everything is due or too far before everything is due. So what you can do is you can use cashier's checks or money orders and buy those in advance and maybe half of what's due. So, for instance, if I get paid at the beginning of the month and I know I've got a second paycheck coming in the middle of the month, but all of my bills are due at the end of the month, I can take money from that first paycheck and maybe get a money order that covers 50% of the light bill. Maybe get a money order that covers 50% of the card note or a cashier's check. So now that money, I can't cash that cashier's check because it's already made out to the card note. It's already made out to the electric company. So I'm taking care of half of my bills with half of my pay. So now when I get that second check.
I'm sorry, Krista. So let me see if I understand. So what you're saying is basically you take that money out that you would normally take out for those particular bills, and then you put them in a money order cashier's check so that you don't spend it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So I would go get a cashier's check for the mortgage company, but if so for instance, I know we're talking about people who live paycheck to paycheck, so that means if I pay all of my bills out of this first check, then I have to go a whole 2 weeks with zero money if I get to my next paycheck. All right, so instead of doing it that way, I can pay, take $600 or $700 out of that $1,100 at the beginning of the month, get a cashier's check that covers most of my bills, that leaves me with gas money, that leaves me with grocery money, that's going to take me through those 2 weeks. Now when I get my second check in the middle of the month, then I just make up the difference, get another cashier's check that makes up the difference, and then I send them. Because what tends to happen is, number one, on payday, we tend to let a couple hundred dollars get away from us just because we have the abundance of money. You know, on payday is the day that you kind of don't even look at the price tags on things. You just kind of pick up what you want and go and not realize how many times you do that on a Friday or Saturday before you decide to sit down and pay bills. So that's money getting away from you. So that's a bad habit. So if you, instead of doing that on Friday, you got your you get your paycheck, and you go and get a money order for half of all of your bills. So now I can feel good about what I've done in preparing myself to take care of these bills, and they're halfway paid. So I know when I get my next check, they're halfway paid. So it leaves me breathing room and a little relaxation money to get me through the next couple weeks. So that's an option that you can use so that you don't basically pay all of your bills at one time and then you struggle. Because on the flip side of that is when we're down to that last week before pay period and we're down to our last $10 or $15, man, we can make $10 or $15 go a long way. But
ain't that the truth?
You know, on payday, it seems like we can't make this $1,100 stretch. So if we flip that mindset and start treating the $1,100 like the $15 down to the last few days, then it's like, man, I want to go somewhere, but I know I got to make this gas last me till Friday and it's Monday. So we start thinking about all of those things. I want to go out to eat, but I got $10. This $10 has got to buy three meals. So now you go to the store and you get you some rice, you get you some eggs, you get, you know, you make that stuff work when you have to.
Oh, now listen, now you're talking my language with that rice and that eggs, I'm telling you.
Yeah, you start looking at, okay, how can I make this stretch? But we tend to not want to make the $1,100 stretch when we first get it. Well, if you use that scenario where you're applying money towards every bill every time you get paid, now you're making it stretch because you're allocating that money right away before it gets away from you.
I never thought about it that way because you're right. We do when we get down to our last little bit. How many times? Because I will tell you, I'm a Starbucks fiend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Starbucks fiend. And because I'm such a fiend, I have gotten good advice. You know, buy stocks in the place that you like to shop. So
yes.
I'm good with
yes.
that. And I did. I did that last year. I ended up buying stocks last time we had someone talking about our finances. And I did that. So I don't feel bad. But you're right. When it comes down to that whole, because I do, I take my money out that I want to put on my little Starbucks card and I keep it. All right, this is how much coffee I want to drink for the month. And I actually make it like one of my bills. And I go ahead and I just put that to the side and just leave it there. But you're right. It's like, I started thinking, I don't need it every day. So I do. I get down to that last, I'm going to make this little $20 stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do that early, and I never even thought about that that's what I was doing. I said, I'm going to make this stretch because sometimes I don't need it every day, although I feel like I need it every day. But it's right, you know, it's so true about the you do. You make that $15 or that $20 or that $100 stretch, and I never even thought about flipping it to make you think to do the same way with your own paycheck. So that is definitely a good one. So now I can't believe an hour is zooming by, but let's talk about your book. Yeah, I mean, really, because if you don't mind, once we get off the air, because I'm still going to be chatting with folks in line, and if
I'll
you want, you know, definitely post on, you know, some other tips that, please, by all means, post on, because I've been posting, as we've been talking, I've been posting things that you have been saying, the tips that you've been giving out. I've been posting on the Hannah Footprints page so people can tell, just like I'm posting now, making that $1,100 stretch like you make that last $15 stretch. That is that is so funny because it's really easy to do. It doesn't make sense because, you know, you get your paycheck, you want to run through it, and you end up running through it until you get down to your last 15. And I know I'm guilty of that. I'm totally guilty of that. But that
and then realize when you get to that last 15, you ain't paid a single bill. So, yeah, I've been there and done that one too. Like, where did this money go, and did I pay any bills? So, yeah.
Like, what? Like, you're like, where did the money go? What did I get? Huh? What happened? And
I like to say it like this. You stop treating your money like the harvest and start treating it like the seed. See, when the farmers went and gathered the harvest, there's a celebration because of the abundance. But a good farmer, before that celebration, has already set aside enough seed for next year's harvest.
And that's true.
We tend to get right to the harvest festival and celebration and never set aside that seed for next year's harvest.
Right.
We try to set aside the seed last.
I hope you all are listening out here. I hope you guys are getting there. So now let's talk about, and congratulations on, then this is your first book, or is this?
This is. This
book?
Is my first book, Financial Health Traffic Report. Overcoming the Roadblocks Keeping You from Your Financial Destination.
Yay. All right. I don't like to read because, you know, you get people say, but.
Well, I will tell you, this is a short read. It is very powerful, and it lays out the strategies in a very clear and concise way. I like to say that this is a book on money that's written in plain English.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you get books on finance and it's like, what are they talking about? It probably makes sense to somebody, but I'm not getting it.
And it's the truth. And I thank you for, and for those of you who have Kindles and Nooks, it is available. Make sure you get it, because I know sometimes we get it and you can get it on your smartphones and all of that. But sometimes we do. And like you said, it is a very easy and it's a short and easy read. It's very simple. Anyone can understand, because you're right. We sit here and we talk. I mean, even for those of us who are educated and we've been working for a long time and we have portfolios and we have stocks, let's just keep it real. A lot of things we don't, I mean, folks get to talking to us, the professionals get you like, yeah, okay. So what does that mean in fifth grade English? What you trying to
say?
Yeah. You know, and I have to tell people, like, talk to me in fifth grade English, because I don't get it. I mean, I understand and I respect the fact that you're the professional and you know all the ins and the outs, but make it plain to me.
Yeah, and that's the future book is just about that, because one of the things that we teach in our program is how investments work. We tend to rely too much on the professionals. Well, I like to use this analogy. Warren Buffett sits down with a financial planner or a financial advisor. Is that planner or advisor trying to talk over Warren Buffett's head? No, they're not, because they know he knows his stuff.
Right.
So we teach people how investments work and how money works. So when you finally flip your cash flow from negative to positive, you pay down your debt, now you got an extra $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 a month and you're ready to start investing. Well, when you sit down with an investment planner or an advisor, they will be able to recognize within the first 3 seconds of a conversation with you that you know your stuff as well. So they won't talk over your head. Because what typically happens is a person gets money, maybe a lump sum, maybe a windfall, and they go sit down with a financial planner. And that planner, you have to remember, is there's a natural conflict of interest there that they don't teach you about. And that conflict is they are working on behalf of their company. So everything is in the best interest of the company, and not necessarily for you. Now, a good financial planner will put you in a situation where it's win-win. It's a win for you and a win for the company, but always know they're always working in the best interest of the company and in a lot of cases in the best interest of themselves because of the commissions they earn on the products that they want to sell you. So we teach people how investments work, how to account for inflation and taxes in your investments, because that's something that's not taught. A lot of people are putting money to the side and they are doing the right things, but then they come to investment or retirement age and realize they don't have enough to retire on comfortably because no one taught them that you have to account for taxes and inflation during your retirement planning. So, for instance, the rule of 72 says if I'm getting a 4% rate of return on my money, it's going to take 18 years for my money to double. Well, if I invest $10,000 and think that in 18 years I'm going to have $20,000, that is 100% correct. However, that $20,000 is only going to be worth $10,000 because the cost of living also doubles every 18 years. So no one told me 18 years ago that I should have been investing more because I have to account for inflation. So we teach all of that sort of stuff along with how to free up your cash and how to find the money to start investing, but also understand how investments work so you can properly invest your money so that you can outpace inflation And you can cover your tax liability when you start drawing on that retirement and when you get to those golden years.
So now you're in St. Louis. I'm here in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I have folks who are listening in Texas and California and in Toronto. And mm-hmm. we want to know more. And you have a program. So now is your program strictly based in St. Louis, or are you online, or are you, you know, we want to be a part of the program because we need to learn. Lord knows we need to learn. How do we, how do we learn more? How do we get involved?
Sure, sure. No, the program is a national program because, like I said, we primarily teach people tax strategies and the true benefits of having a home-based business because not only can you adjust your W-4 form and get it right just because you filled it out wrong, but the other piece when we talk about minimizing your tax liability, well, many of us have passions. We have things that we would love to do and would love to create a business on, and we kind of hold ourselves back because we don't understand that the tax code was written for business people and by business people. And by turning your passion into a business of some sort, then you get it to take advantage of over 400 tax deductions available to you. So we talked about minimizing your taxes from the W-4 standpoint. How about getting a portion of your rent as a tax deduction, a portion of your mortgage as a tax deduction, a portion of the miles that you're putting on your car as a tax deduction? We are right now getting ready to send our children back to school. So if you have a home-based business and put your children to work in your home-based business, you can pay them to work in your home-based business, and that's a tax deduction for you. And then they can take that money and go out and buy their school supplies and school clothes and that sort of thing. There's a lot of things that we teach that are not common but are very effective to any wealth-building portfolio. So you can find out more about that if you go to financialhealthmentor.com. So, again, that's www.financialhealthmentor.com. And when you get there, what it will do, it takes you to my Facebook fan page app, and it will ask you to confirm your email address. But then you will listen to my mentor explaining all of these concepts and the program and how it works. But you can also find me on YouTube where I have over 50 videos on these strategies on YouTube, which is also at Financial Health Mentor, so youtube.com/financialhealthmentor. The Facebook fan page is also facebook.com/financialhealthmentor. Ricky was getting on me about not being on Twitter. I do have a Twitter account. I don't tweet as much, but I'm at Cortez Springer on Twitter. So that's Cortez, C-O-R-T-E-Z, Springer, S-P-R-I-N-G-E-R. So that's my Twitter handle. And then Instagram, I do post inspirational pictures on Instagram, and that's at Financial Health Mentor as well. So, yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me. Obviously, you can reach out through Ricky and get a hold of me that way as well. And the book is on sale in paperback and ebook format. You can go to lulu.com if you do not own a Kindle. Lulu.com will allow you to download it for other devices. If you own a Kindle, you can definitely get it at Amazon.com specifically for Kindle. But the paperback version is available on both of those outlets as well.
Well, and don't worry, because he's going to put it on the Hand and Footprints page. Those of you who are liking Hand and Footprints, and I appreciate those of you who were in the chat room. I know we had a couple of technical difficulties a little bit because it was getting hot in that chat room for chat questions. And I thank you so much, Cortez. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We're going to talk a little bit more after we get off the air. So I'll
I'll stick around. Yeah.
But I definitely thank you. Thank you so much for being on. Thank you for the tips that you put out. If you guys have been noticing, I've been putting the tips that he's been saying throughout the course of the show. Don't worry about it. If there's anything that you've missed, you know the shows are always archive, so you guys can go as soon as I put the link out. You guys can go and definitely check out what you missed. I thank you. Guys, if it's not like breathing, don't do it. Have a great Saturday, Lord willing. We will see you guys next Wednesday night. Well, this Wednesday night on the 15-Minute Conundrum, and then next Saturday morning, 10:30 Eastern Daylight Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You guys can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+. And if you want, you have any questions, my email, themsrikkijones@gmail.com. Again, Cortez, thank you so very much for getting us financially healthy. And I truly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ricky. It was a pleasure.
Oh, definitely, definitely. See you guys next week.